Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Thin, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. Our show this morning is about looking your best, and my guest is Dr. Joyce Knudsen, the creator of The Image Maker, Inc. Dr. Knudsen has been training people all around the world since 1985. She has been an author, speaker, television host, and an expert widely quoted in the media. She is also the first image consultant in the world to hold the coveted Certified Image Master designation from the Association of Image Consultants International, as well as being the first Certified Image Master Trainer to train abroad. We are here this morning and we'll be discussing how to help you to look your best and to give you ideas on how you can put your best foot forward in whatever environment and situation you encounter. Good morning, Dr. Joyce. Welcome to my show.
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Fantastic. I'm glad to have you on the show this morning, and I'd like to start out by talking a little bit about yourself. Can you please walk us through your life's journey from childhood to the present moment?
Wow, there's lots of years to go back to. I was born in 1944 and lived my childhood with my seven brothers and sisters, mom and dad. Besides myself, there were four brothers and two sisters. My parents did the best they could with what they had, and we had little. My father was a milkman by day, a cab driver by night, and it was a pretty rowdy household with fighting, yelling, and vying for attention. In addition to this, I discovered I had an eye problem, which gave me no peripheral vision or depth perception, and I could only see out of one eye. So I had to learn how to have a different kind of vision, and I developed that. I served as the mother of, I served as the mother of my four younger brothers and sisters while my parents worked. I didn't do well in school as I had so much responsibility at home. When I was older, I began to think about my life and what would become of Joyce. I decided right then and there to research how people should treat other people and become whole, not just to feel good, but to look good and feel good from the inside out. I knew at the age of 16 that I wanted to work with people to help them better their lives, but how could I do that unless I did this first for myself?
Right.
So I enrolled in beauty school at about 17 and learned how to put on makeup, dress, and other image-like things outside appearance. I met my prince at the age of 21 and married at the age of 24. We've been married 42 years.
Fantastic.
It's a milestone, isn't it? I worked in administrative typing positions as I learned how to type it as a young child. My mother told me, you learn how to type, I can't put you through school. So I always did modeling and commercials to make extra money. And then at 36, after raising two beautiful children who were now in high school, I enrolled in Oakland University, where I graduated with honors in communications. I went on to get my master's in business from Central Michigan University at that time, and then at the ripe young age of 48, I decided to work on my PhD. Since I opened my business in 1985, the PhD just enriched my knowledge and boosted my confidence to keep moving up with technology and working on making the difference I so wanted to make. That's my story.
That's fantastic. What's fascinating about it is that I've talked to so many people and things that, you know, what they ended up where they're at right now is totally different than when they first started out. And what's fascinating about you talking about the fact that you pretty much sort of became mothers to your siblings, so to speak, and you had a lot of responsibilities. And then, of course, I'm sure there was a point in time that you're questioning yourself, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, am I the one that's been picked on to do this certain, you know, is my destiny written right now, this very minute? And yet you find that all these things that you went through is sort of getting you ready for something bigger and better, far beyond your imagination, so to speak.
I think that's true. I think you almost have to come from some kind of adversity in order to grow, and I certainly grew while I was a child.
Yeah. So that's fascinating to hear your story, because I think, it, you know, a lot of times we notice that we we're thinking, you know, well, we got to be in the perfect track, so to speak, from the very beginning. But you don't necessarily have to, because what I like about what I've just heard, what you just said, for example, education, and the fact that you went through all the way to a PhD program, and, you know, it takes discipline, because you did get married when you were 21, and the fact that you've been married all these years, that's fantastic, and obviously you have a loving, supportive family, and that has allowed you to be the person you are. To pursue your personal goals as well as professional goals in this case. That's
fantastic. Well, I was very lucky. I was very lucky because I got married at the age of 24.
Well, 24, and, I'm sorry. Yeah.
My husband was 25, and we just clicked. And without him, I don't know that I would be where I'm at. He says I would. But, you know, when you have support and love, something I didn't know about, because I was the one giving it, I wasn't getting it.
Right.
I was getting it from my brothers and sisters. I wasn't really getting it from my parents. They weren't even home.
Right.
So that is why I feel so blessed to have found the right man at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had to go through divorce or anything like that. And we just are best friends.
Right, right. Well, things happen for a reason, and in this case, you were, you know, you kind of right along there, you know, with
right.
your entire plan of action, so to speak. Well, what inspired you to do what you do?
Well, I really had a great inspiration from my life's experience, as you just said, and I saw what not to do, and I would write down what I needed to accomplish in my life. But my main inspiration was my brother Larry, who passed away at the age of 42 of lung cancer. He was my best friend in the family. We were 2 years apart. We did everything together. And he advised me to open my business and live out my dream, since he could no longer do that.
Okay.
It's still very sad. I think about
him
every day, and I feel like he inspires me every day to get up and work. Some days, 3 days in a row without sleep. I love what I do.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk about The Image Maker, Inc. I mean, this is certainly your baby, obviously, besides the two children that you have, I believe.
Well, and they're grown now, so they don't need me anymore.
And so this is definitely your baby, and it's, you know, it's fantastic. I mean, I've read your bio, and I've read a lot of things about you, and you're making an awesome impact in our global community with the Image Maker, Inc. So tell us a little bit about what it's all about.
Well, the Image Maker Incorporated was first created to do appearance, because that's what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quickly realized that appearance isn't enough. You have to have behavioral background. You have to have communications. And so I went to school. I learned all of the, about that. My bachelor's was in communications. My master's was in business. And so I really learned about what was necessary. And so many people think that Image Maker is incorporated as a photography studio. Since, however, my brand has accepted me as this authentic and holistic image consultant who truly wants to make a difference in people's lives. And I figured out if I can do this for myself, then so can other people. And so that's it was created to change people's lives. I basically work with people so that they can raise their self-esteem, so they can become happy and live fulfilling lives.
That's very interesting, though, because, and you mentioned something very, very important, too, because what you mentioned just now is that, you know, okay, you could basically, your charm can get you into the front door, but that's just one half of the equation, because it's a complete package that makes a big difference.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, so that's truly very, very different. That's the way I look at things. How does it transform individuals?
Well, I think first an individual needs to want to be transformed. There's a lot of people out there. You see them in the airport. You see them at the post office. And many are content with who they are. They
right.
have a good self-esteem, and they don't want to change. They like the way they look, and good for them. It wouldn't be good enough for me, because I know in order to get ahead of any competition, transformation
right.
is necessary, and one needs to know the elements of all three of what the Association of Image Consultants terms appearance, behavior, and communication skills.
Very, very interesting. And you talk about personal style. I know you mentioned that a lot. Can you please elaborate more about that?
absolutely. Well, fashion is ever-changing. If you look on the runways, you know, one year this color is in, another year you don't dare to wear that color from last year. Style is not a fashion. Style is an individual thing. You develop style by knowing your body type and accentuating your best features. I actually have a website. It's www.personalstyleanalysis.com, mm-hmm. where you can put in your measurements, and out comes a personalized report of your best things to wear and your worst things to wear. So once you know how to present yourself, this is out of the way, and you'll mm-hmm. always feel comfortable in your appearance. So we shouldn't mm-hmm. listen to what fashion is telling us to do. You need to develop your own style.
Right. Right. Now, how does one in I've been to your website, and it's fascinating. It's got a lot of information on it. And when you talk about personal style, how does, you know, does environment, the way you live, where you work, does that have any effect in how you dress sometimes?
Well, definitely culturally, we do follow the customs of dress. I'll give you an example. I had a class just a couple of weeks ago, and there was a girl from India there, and she would wear her saris.
Right.
And that is the way they dress. The other day she dressed traditional Western, but she did put on her sari, and we all were very curious, and she explained us what it means and mm-hmm. how it's worn. And so it was very interesting. So definitely, besides the culture, we need to live and work in clothing proportionately right for us. It doesn't matter. Even a sari needs to fit mm-hmm. you best for your figure type, and not just dress what's in style. Mm-hmm. There's a tidbit that I like to say to when I train people is the designers do not dress to please you. They make clothes to make money.
Right.
So
right.
we don't want to have them tell us what we should wear because we could look ridiculous in it.
Now, do you help them, like in this particular case? Now, when you talk about, well, sari may perhaps be a traditional wardrobe that she has to wear where she works or the culture-wise and so on, do you assist her in getting maybe the right colors, combinations and stuff like that?
This happens to be a person who is a well-known image consultant, so she knows how to do all that. I really don't practice image consulting. I really haven't done image consulting in maybe mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. I train the trainers.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't advise anybody, although in the classes that I teach, they are told all of these
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm. Well, but wouldn't it be, though? I mean, coming, I guess what I'm saying here is that I'm alluding to is that you can keep your cultural look once you know your body style, I mean, your personal style and taste and everything else. You can incorporate because you are teaching them how to present a specific image, I guess.
Right. Well, absolutely. The thing is that if you're wearing a sari, then mm-hmm. the fashion style rules can't really apply because it's a sari. It's not a skirt, a blazer,
uh-huh.
a top. And so we just respect the customs of dress
right.
in various countries, and we don't try to change them because that is what their culture dictates. Now, when they leave their culture and, let's say, go to an international meeting, they don't wear their saris or they don't wear their head wraps. They don't do that. They know that in Western culture they need to dress Western. So they know how to do it. Some of them know how to do it more than the image
mm-hmm.
consultants do because they've had to learn by studying what do I pack when I go out of the country.
Right. You know, you answered exactly what I wanted to hear because what happens is that you're wearing comfortable clothing, so to speak, like at home, and then now you're about to attend a function. Hey, what do I wear? What
right.
image do I want to present?
I was just going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt. If you take away
mm-hmm.
who someone is, you're stripping
mm-hmm.
them of a little bit of self-esteem.
Right.
And so if someone is an Indian and they're dressing with a sari, you don't take that away if that's what they choose to wear.
Mm-hmm.
However, if they're comfortable dressing Western, then it shouldn't be up to me or anybody else to
mm-hmm.
tell them not to wear what they are wearing in their own country.
Mm-hmm.
And since this is an international association, we need to respect all the international countries and how they dress.
Certainly, I understand that. You brought up something about self-esteem. I mean, I know that is very much associated with how we look and how we behave and how we feel about ourselves. how do we create that self-confidence through our wardrobe?
Well, this is a great question, because if we like what we see when we look in the mirror, that mm-hmm. raises our self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of me looking in the mirror right now. I don't get on a telephone call without looking in the mirror, because when
mm-hmm.
you're looking in the mirror, you sound better, you feel better, you know you look better, you prepared for the interview. So it's very, very important to look in the mirror and like what we see. Dressing appropriately makes us feel good, and when we feel good, then we could accomplish more, because that getting the looking and feel good is out of the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you talk about a lot also. I mean, can you give us some sort of a, you talk extensively about self-image, is your perception of yourself. Can you please give us some elaboration about what this is all about?
Sure. If you perceive yourself to be unattractive, then that perception becomes reality.
Mm-hmm.
And can affect your self-esteem. If you perceive yourself to be beautiful, then you'll have the self-confidence needed in order to change that perception.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you another example that I brought up before.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years, I was very embarrassed about my eye problem.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to McDonald's, and I couldn't see what was up there, because I only can see what's right in front of me. That's why computers work so good.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in front of me and you're standing next to me, sometimes
mm-hmm.
my husband will be standing on the side of me and scares the heck out of me, because I don't see him.
Yeah,
I mean, and if you look at me or my pictures, you do not think that I have any kind of a problem. So I'm perceived to be a certain way in someone's eyes, and that's their reality. It wasn't until maybe 3 years ago or four, I can't remember exactly which convention it was, that I did a seminar, and people would say, why were you using magnifying equipment? And I told them about it, and I kept it to myself for all those years, because my self-image, my perception of myself was, I'm different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look, I can't see like the other people. I can't see somebody to the side. I can't judge the distance between me and them. And so they don't understand. And unless you go through something, unless you go through it with someone else who's going through it too, it's not going to be understood. What you
go
through is between you and what person you believe in, God or whatever person that you believe in. So I got the self-confidence over the years to say,
mm-hmm.
I don't have good vision, but I have something better. I have something, a vision for other people and for the world and for even our image profession,
mm-hmm.
to be able to have everybody, not just some people, work with appearance, communication, behavior, all of the things that are involved in image, not just how we look.
Right.
Because how we feel affects how we look.
Right.
That is my dream, for me to see that happen within my profession.
I mean, the way I'm hearing is that, you know, you have a tremendous challenge within yourself, and then what you did was is you overcome that, and you find, and I find that fascinating, because, say, an average person out there who's got all whatever they have, it's a mental challenge. It's a perception. It's a personal self-inflicted anxiety, basically.
That's a good way to say it. Great. That is a wonderful way to say it. A self-inflicted... What did you say it again?
Anxiety, self-inflicted anxiety, yeah.
I love that, because it is self-inflicted. That's the definitive word, because
mm-hmm.
we put things onto ourselves. I've been in doctor's mm-hmm. offices where they said, well, you're a freak, and they would call all these other people in and see this freak condition that I have. Nobody should ever have to hear the word, you're a freak.
Right.
You know, they told me when I went to Ohio State University that I had the lowest scores in the history of the college. Well, I couldn't see. I couldn't see the board.
Yeah.
Nobody really tends to understand special needs.
That's right.
This may not be autism or other special needs things, but I had special needs. And if somebody would have understood that, it's just amazing how I've had to just do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
In order to move forward.
Right, right. And you, what you mentioned is it's very interesting, because from the physical self-image about what you're talking about, that affects the it should not affect the intellectual self-image of yourself, though.
No.
Because you might be, like you say, physically, maybe, you know, you may not be quite there or whatever, but intellectually you are as good, if not far beyond other people.
Well, I don't try to be far beyond other people. I believe competition should be to yourself. I'm in competition with Joyce Knudsen, not in competition with anybody else. I think everybody's got something special to give.
Yeah.
And maybe my special is very different from their special, but we're all special.
Right.
And so I really feel that it's important to not try to be in competition. You know, when you join any kind of group, most people say, well, I don't like this group, but there's nothing in it for me.
Right.
I always tell these people, ask what you can do to help this group to make it what you want it to be instead of thinking that way. And it's just all in the thinking process.
Right. And what I meant also, competition here, I mean, you know, being better in the sense that what I'm saying is that from the mental capacity, you're right, because, hey, I can do exactly what they can do. I mean, it comes back to, well, I mean, let's talk about men-women. I mean, it's obvious, with exception to, you know, some cases, you know, the man may be stronger than women, but that doesn't mean that, you know, men, by definition, are more intelligent than women. That's what
right.
I meant.
No, I understand. I understand what you meant. And to me, I would advise everybody listening to go to school because nobody can ever take that away from you. I will tell you, there were many nights of crying when I was working on my PhD dissertation because unbelievable how much work it is. But work does not scare me. I'm a hard worker. And a hard worker has nothing to do with eyesight. It has to do with magnifying equipment to making you work. That's all it has to do with.
Well, you have to have intellectual knowledge to do what you did, and so I think I commend you for that because I think you utilized it in a very unique way from a standpoint of, you know, in this case, like I say, showing up yourself first, and then you realize that, hey, wait a minute now, you know, this applies to everyone.
Okay.
And that's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, because I think that's what happens because a lot of times we don't realize that we have it within ourselves, these abilities. It doesn't matter where we are at in our lives or whatever, but if we use our intelligence, that can certainly show up in any areas that we perhaps, coming back to what I just said, where, you know, the self-inflicted anxiety kind of thing, that we can show everything up if we focus ourselves on that, you know. So give us some tips on how we identify ourselves with regards to the various issues of self-image, you know, perception in terms of are there any certain things that we need to look at and how can we overcome these?
Well, I think the best way to overcome these is to base your identity on your accomplishments, the important things that you've done and are doing. The more you do, the more you earn your identity. So even if it's taking care of a child well, it doesn't have to be that you're a businesswoman. It could be anything. It could be being a good son to your mom. It could be being a good mom to your son. In my case, I have both. So it's very, I think that identifying ourselves is the best way to overcome is to accomplish.
I mean, you're basically looking at what you mentioned is some sort of visualizing yourself as a success in whatever your strengths are, so to speak.
Well, that goes without saying. Yes, we have to visualize ourselves doing it, and then we have to do it. I think what most people's mistake is that they always talk about what they're going to do, but they never do it. It's not connected to an action.
Right.
And a want has to be connected to an action in order to become real.
Very true. And then how about addressing all the negative thoughts that comes with it?
You have to take your life. The way that I did it was I just wrote all the negative thoughts I had each day, and we have something like 50,000 thoughts a day. I hear from the Internet statistics, that whether they're right or not, I don't know, but we think about 50,000 thoughts a day. Make them positive. Don't make them negative. If you see yourself judging someone, say to yourself, I'll give you an example. You say to yourself, maybe there's a reason. I had a friend who died in her 40s, a really, really wonderful friend, and we were driving to the mall. It was about a week before she was told she was going to die, and she parked in the handicap space. And somebody came out of the car and went, she's beautiful, and they said, yeah, you're handicapped. And yes, she was. She was going to die.
Right.
But see, people judged her. And see, I get the opposite of that. People judge me because they think I can see when I can't.
Sure.
And so people will say, well, I was driving alongside of you, and you didn't even acknowledge me. Well, I can't see you. And I don't drive anymore, which is, you know, a lot of people, 75, they're afraid they're having a fit when somebody takes their driver's license away. At 63, I had to have my driver's license. I have a driver's license, and I drive down side roads, but you don't want me behind you on a freeway.
Right.
It just isn't going to happen.
Right.
And airports are very difficult for me because I can't see where something starts and something ends, and escalators have starting and ending points. And I literally have to be very cognizant of looking down.
Right.
And fortunately, to my credit, I've never fallen. So that is my fear, because at this age, you break a hip, you're having hip surgery.
That's true. Very, very
so
true.
So I have to be very, very careful. And so I base my identity on who I am and what I've done through my lifetime. And I truly believe if I can do it, anybody can. The man in the moon can.
There you go.
Because the more that you do and the more that you see that you can do, the more you could earn identity. And there's something we're going to talk about later that will show you a little bit more about what I've earned. It's great.
That's fantastic. And to the person who says, you know, well, you didn't see me, I was driving right beside you. Well, I chose to ignore you.
That would have been a better thing for me to say.
No, I'm just kidding. They're going to be emailing me and, you know, and so, what did you say? You know?
But they really don't understand because
they
would see the person beside them. And that they really don't understand what people have to be contend with. Some people have diabetes. Some people have to... they get low blood sugar, they feel faint at the wheel, maybe they're going slower because they don't want to hit anybody, maybe they're not really trying to slow you down. There's just so many things that we have to be understanding. And there's something that I do in my classes that I think is really so wonderful. I learned in a seminar somewhere along the line, because I'm an avid learner, that the word understand means to stand under. So in classes, I get on my knees and stand under the pupil. When I say pupil, I mean student.
Right.
And I say to them, tell me about yourself. And one person in my class one time was homeless at one time. And I just said, you know, I said, what is it like to be homeless? And I was at the bottom of him. Here's a homeless person. Here's me.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a wonderful thing for everybody to know, because if you stand under someone, then you can look up to them and see what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Sure. Every one of us has our own personal, you know, thing that we go through, when we just have to respect that person for what they do, and there's a reason behind everything. We may never understand, but we need to respect that, because they are doing the best they can within their own limits.
Absolutely.
And everyone has their upper and lower limits based on life experiences. And I think if we respect that, that's what it's all about, because you mentioned about, you know, him or her being homeless. Well, you can get as close as you can understanding and be, you know, absorbing whatever he or she has to say. But ultimately, unless you're on the street yourself, you can never feel the full effect. But the fact that you are as close as you can, that makes a positive difference, and it makes your life richer in a way.
Absolutely. Definitely in my case, it does.
One of the things I know you talk about is, you know, in this, is that finding a mentor. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I really think everybody needs a mentor. In my case, I married one of the smartest people I've ever known, and he's my mentor. I don't do anything without talking to him about it first. He was a doctor. He's retired now, podiatrist, but extremely well accomplished and extremely smart. So, and I've had other mentors over the years. I've had mentors for my coaching business, mentors for assessments. I just think it's very important to go to the person who's done what you want to do and ask them, how did they do it? And you have to pay, but it's money worth spending.
Right.
You have to think, when you think of an investment, you have to think about what the investment is. If you're giving somebody $100 an hour or more to talk to them, and you're going to, in turn, when you're done with the information, earn $3,000, then it's a very good investment.
Precisely. And then, if you're searching for help, then you need to be looking at someone that can help you define yourself, I guess, in some ways. You know,
and how could you...
The witnesses,
You're right. Well, how can you find that person unless you find somebody who's actually done what you want to do?
Right. And you're basically copying that person. in some
well,
way.
Well, you're emulating that person.
Right, right,
you have your own style, and
right,
they help you develop that. But it first starts with assessing yourself, and you have to know where your self-esteem levels are, where your body image is, where your what kind of behavior you have as per the other behaviors,
mm-hmm.
and understanding all four different behaviors, and then also learning about yourself on how you think, what you value. And so it's a very, very big process, and because of my training, I've developed
mm-hmm.
my own coaching program for other people to learn from me about.
And you talk about also about keeping a journal. I mean, has that helped tremendously in terms of helping people to focus on within, from within themselves?
I believe that everyone needs a journal, even men, because
mm-hmm.
really all a journal is paper.
mm-hmm.
It's paper in a book, and the nice thing about it being in a book is it's all in one place.
Yeah.
So I advocate doing journals because if you write something down, like I, for example, have today to do, I have a to-do list and
mm-hmm.
a not what not to do list on every
mm-hmm.
on the journal pages.
Mm-hmm.
So for Monday, I'll have to what I need to do: talk
mm-hmm.
to Johnny, you know,
mm-hmm.
prepare for this interview, do another chapter for the book I'm thinking of getting written.
Mm-hmm.
Call a friend, whatever it is that I have to do, and make them, I say no more than three, because it's almost impossible to accomplish more than 3 to 5 things in one day. And what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
For example, what not to do is just get sort of distracted and go watch a TV program.
Right.
Because
right.
now that there's DVR, you can tape them and you can watch them when you can no longer be working, like at 3 o'clock in the morning if you're still up. And so I really think it's important that people write down things, because if you don't write them down, they're just thoughts.
Right.
If you write them down, they are to-dos. And I don't go to bed till my to-dos are all done and done well.
Right, right. And basically what you're doing also, you're actually programming yourself to be disciplined.
Yes.
And
because I'm not an organized person. People
mm-hmm.
are shocked when I say that, but
uh-huh.
I'm not an organized person. I lose things. I'm always looking for something, my phone, my keys, whatever. but that's not in my journal. I should write that
yeah.
in my journal. Put keys on counter, and then I'll know where the keys are. But and that it's important. Sometimes I have to put on there eat, because sometimes
mm-hmm.
I'll go without eating because there isn't any time for me
mm-hmm.
to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely believe in journals, and I highly recommend them for everybody.
Fantastic. In your blog, you talk about 15 steps to success. Can you highlight about 5 or 6 of the must-have steps in order for us to succeed? Because this is part of that image maker within ourselves.
Well, that's very a good question. I mean, everybody can read it. It's just imagemaker1.com/WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can go and read them. But success is something you define. It's not defined by your mother, your brother, your aunt, your cousin. It's defined by you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a feeling that you have. And so I would say that the main thing that you need to do is know what success is, that it occurs in steps. You have to balance to be successful, have a lot of balance in your life, honesty about what abilities you're good at, and you have to know what isn't success. People think success is intelligence, formal education, family background, money, or luck,
mm-hmm.
or like you say, born with a silver spoon. Success
yeah.
is not that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth. It was always just, you know, I was always just doing what I had to do to get by.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the really good ones is to get rid of the if-onlys, because everybody has, though, the
mm-hmm.
if-onlys. If I had not married him or her, if I had
mm-hmm.
finished school, if my parents have a divorce, the company did not change, I chose another job, I was
mm-hmm.
rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are if-onlys, and what they are just excuses that hold people back.
Right, basically
and,
the what-ifs, basically. That's what
yeah,
you're
the what-ifs. Well, you know, they're saying, if only I hadn't done this, I would be this. Well, those are excuses. Just do
mm-hmm.
it now.
Right.
And so I would say the last one would be to learn my success formula. And my success formula is to take risks, because
mm-hmm.
without risk, there is no success.
Mm-hmm.
You want to join groups that promote. You demand respect. It's very hard when you get to be even a itty-bitty bit at the top because people don't like you. People want to critique you. People want to say you're not good. They want to say bad things about you. Demand respect. I always say, I don't care if you like me, but I want you and I demand that you respect me.
Right.
And you want to throw away judgments about other people because, you know, God knows I have been judged about my my vision and among other things. So
right.
You want to throw those judgments away. They'll never do you any good. You will not be a happy person. And you want to have your own values. And you give yourself credit. If you diapered a baby and the baby smells good, give yourself credit. It doesn't matter what
right.
you're giving yourself credit for. If I get off the phone and say, yeah, I think Johnny and I had a good interview, give myself credit. Give yourself
right.
credit for doing a good interview. This is
right.
what's so important. You never say anything, anytime, about someone.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, the old saying, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true because people will email these nasty emails about you, something you said on Twitter, or who knows. I mean, I don't even give them the courtesy of an email back because
right.
these people are living in a lower place and they'll never get it.
Mm-hmm.
So gossiping is just out. You don't do it. You accept who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I say, okay, I'm this woman who has done all these things, but I'm still going to Vegas with five of my friends that I went to kindergarten through fifth grade with.
Right.
And I'm the same person I always was. I was Joyce then, and I'm Joyce now. I'm just Joyce with a doctor in front of my name.
Mm-hmm.
And so I accept who I am, and, you know, I'm proud of what I've done, and I'm proud
right.
of who I am. So be proud of yourself and understand what your weaknesses are. If you want your checkbook to be overdrawn, give it to me because I will overdraw it. I do not know how to add or subtract very well. I say that's why they have calculators.
There
and
you
I
go.
Make lots of mistakes, and I say that's why they put erasers on the back of pencils.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn from these weaknesses, and I've learned to hire a virtual assistant to do the things. For example, I can't do an Excel sheet, so to do the things I cannot do. You want to have empathy for the handicapped, however minimal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what little thing they might have, you want to have empathy. When I was in my PhD program, they told me I was over-empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that I feel everyone's pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell me there's something that's hurting you, I hurt for you. That's an over-empathetic thing. So I don't have to worry about having empathy because I have it. You want to understand your strengths. And obviously my strength is communication, so I use it for radio, for mentoring, for phone conversations. That's my strength. If I needed someone to do something that was of an economic nature, I would hire that out. And I think the most important one is to turn setbacks into successes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of my setback, as you know, was my childhood, and I said to myself, very, very young, before I met my husband, I'm going to get a 2-year degree. And so I got an associate's degree before I was even with him.
Right.
And the setback was they told me I was not very smart at Ohio State, so I went to Cuyahoga Community College in Cleveland, Ohio, where I lived 25 years, and graduated. They gave me a grant because we were poor. And they said you had to get a 2.67 grade point average. I got that and then some.
Mm-hmm.
And many years later, I was able to use that associate's degree for the bachelor's, for two years of credit. So I turned a setback of having someone tell me, go home and be a mom, you're just not college material, to graduating from a well-known college with a high grade point average.
Right. Well, what it is not to give up, because I think it's very easy for us to give up because based on the naysayers that we run into. And it's bad enough that we run into these people, and the last thing we want is to give up within ourselves. What I like about what you just said is the thing that resonates with me is like accept who you are. I think that's very, very important. And then it comes back down to one of the things that I've read is you mentioned something about be an original.
Right. You want to always be an original of yourself and not a copy of someone else. I think Eleanor Roosevelt might be the person said. Many people have said it, but I give her the credit.
Yeah, because I think that makes a big difference, because if you accept it, you know, hey, this is who I am, this is what my values are, this is what I want to work for, and then it comes back to, again, to the idea of being successful, is that in anything you do is being persistent. And focus on things that you want to get done, and it doesn't matter anymore, because you turn setbacks into successes, and you can find, and the unique thing about it is that living in the United States is that for every naysayers out there you run into, I can assure you, you can run into a bunch of people that will be on the plus side.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I like what you said about persistence, because I even get hollered at for persistence on my Dr. Joyce fan page, which I guess they now call Like on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I every day go through the people that are not in the club that are friends,
mm-hmm.
and invite them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people say to me, I receive an invitation from you every day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm persistent, and every single one of them joined the fan club. And I went from, in 3 weeks, I went from 6 people to almost 300.
Wow, yeah.
So it makes you a public figure. It makes you someone out there that people want to hear from, they want to hear about, and they want to talk to.
Right, right.
So persistence is a wonderful thing, and if you can take the criticism that goes along with it.
Right, right. And again, ultimately is developing effective communication skills.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be very, very important, because that, it represents you.
It certainly does, absolutely.
And that comes back again to the idea of, how you feel about yourself, because how people listen to you, having what you... You hear what you have to say. We're all guilty of this. I mean, I know, we talk about not judge others, but we subconsciously, we all subconsciously have a certain amount of perception of other people. So whether we put our best foot forward or not, it's going to be critical, because they are going to somehow perceive us in a certain way, without doubt, because that's just natural. So our idea is to be able to put our best foot forward, and the way we do it is being confident in whatever we do. You talk about one of the things that I read that's fascinating is that you have some wonderful tips about interview questions or getting yourself ready for an interview, especially in today's economy. Going back after you losing your job and also retraining, so to speak. Can you share with us some of those wonderful tips that you have?
I'd be happy to. May I go back and just say two things about what we were talking about before?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what other people think about you.
Mm-hmm.
It only matters what you think about yourself.
Ultimately,
and I heard a wonderful
right.
one recently
right.
saying, what mm-hmm. you think of me is none of my business.
That's a good one.
I had to add that. Okay, I'll go to the interviewing tips, since that's the question that you asked.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people go to interviewing tips. I read this in the paper every day, and they can't understand why they're not being hired when they're not even asking a question.
Right.
You need to research the employer and find out who they are. Everybody likes to hear about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of any interview process is research, and you want to learn about the company. How are you going to go work for a company you don't know anything about?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure you always are redoing your curriculum vitae, your resume, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, so many resources now showing you how to do resumes. It's really important that we know our strong points and be able to tell them in an indirect way on paper,
mm-hmm.
why they need to hire you.
Right.
And obviously, in my profession, you have to dress for success.
Right.
So if you come in shabby clothing and you don't look the part that the position is asking for, you must be meticulously groomed and bring properly organized work with you, letters of recommendation, copies of your resume, performance evaluations, list of questions. You know, I've interviewed people to work with me, and
mm-hmm.
I'll look at their nails, and underneath their nails is dirt.
Right.
When I see that, I'm turned off. I make the interview very short. And so going for an interview, you have to know you have to have, if it's a, let's say it's a sales job, you have to know you have to have your teeth fixed. If your teeth have gaps all through them or you're missing a tooth, people won't be able to concentrate. It's like Andy Rooney's eyebrows. You know, bless him for doing what he does on 60 Minutes, but his eyebrows are very thick, and when you look at him, all you see is his eyebrows. And that's an easy trim. It's a very easy trim. So be on time. There's no excuse for being late. To me, that's a lack of respect for the person. You know, people say, oh, there was too much traffic, or there was a car accident, or family emergency. It doesn't cut it. Family emergency, maybe. Doesn't cut it. Well, you won't get the job because other people are going to be there when you were supposed to. So you always want to know how to do the handshaking, the being polite and be positive. Nobody wants to hear about anything negative in an interview. And you want to schedule your interview strategically. People don't realize that there is a statistic for this, that the first person interviewed only gets the job 17% of the time, while the last person interviewed gets the job 55% of the time. The late afternoon is best, and I think the reason for that is because, you know, it's really hard to sit there. I've done this, and interview after interview, you forgot what the first part said, and then somebody comes in, knocks your socks off at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they get the job. I remember in the, was a while ago, when we first moved to Nashville 15 years ago, I was in Detroit, lived there for 25 years, and when I was there, there was all over the paper, recession, no jobs, and then Plastic Pickles put out a, for a job, and of course everybody went, and I was the last person in line of maybe three after me, of hundreds of people just on the street getting into Plastic Pickles. And I remember seeing Russell Post, the president, and saying to him, I would really like this job because of this, this, and this. And he said, you're hired. And I was like the last person. So it's very, very important to know how and what during the interview. You want to know the question behind the question. So, for example, every question is trying to ask, why should we hire you? Be sure you know the answer. And maybe there'll be a question about meeting deadlines or time management. Consider what the interview is attempting to find out. You have to be a little bit of, like a detective. And you want to always watch for nonverbal communications. If somebody is, like, you know, moving their head or touching their toes or moving their hands around, they're not interested. So make it easy for you and just leave as soon as you can, because you could see they're not going to hire you. You want to have a strong finish, and you definitely want to follow up. You want to make sure that you want to ask when the position will be filled. Give your qualifications and whatever you've left out. This is the time to sell yourself. If you're interested in the job, you ask what the next step are. And I learned from a very wise woman one time where she says, by when? And I think by when is a great thing to say, because by when will I hear? I think it's a great thing to listen to. And follow up, you want to think back and evaluate your interview, and also keep a log book or a journal with dates and times of your interviews. And here's a big one. You don't want to just zip off an email. You want to write a thank you note within 24 hours, and not only to the person that interviewed you, but everyone that you talked with when you were there, thanking them for their valuable time. I've talked to people on television when I used to do a segment on Channel 2, and they asked this question, and they said that one time they hired somebody, it turned out to be the wrong person, and then they, after they saw that person wasn't working out, they remembered this person that had sent them a thank you note. And it turned out to be somebody that was very good on the show. So that thank you note can really make the difference between getting or not getting the job. And so, you know, there's job questions you need to be ready for. There's questions for the interview, but all interview questions are really the same question. Why are you the best person for the job?
And, of course, you have to be genuine, too, because people can see if you're putting up on a show, so to speak. Not being genuine.
Absolutely. Genuine is uniqueness, and is very much who I'm all about. And so you want to set goals before the interview. It's your responsibility to leave the interview feeling secure that the interviewer knows as much that they need to know about you, your skills, your abilities, your achievements. That's why it's important for you to get those.
Right.
You know, you've got to get those first. And if you sense that there are misconceptions, you want to clear them up. If the interview doesn't ask you important questions, diplomatically bring them up and answer them. Do not
right.
leave the meeting without getting your own questions answered. So you have a clear idea of what you would be getting yourself into. I know that today, in today's recession, it's very hard for people to think that way, but people will respect you if you come up with a question that they really wanted to know but didn't ask.
Right, right. And that's important because, well, that tells me that you engage also versus you script it in a way. Because
right.
And that's a degree of that sort of being genuine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think that great questions for the employer are like, what are the size of your company? What is your sales volume? What are the company's earning? Does the company want to expand in the future? What are the trends?
Mm-hmm.
Where is this company along with other companies that do the same thing? I always ask image consultants, how will you be different than other image consultants? You have to think of a way. And when I moved
right.
to Tennessee 15 years ago, I asked myself what can be done that isn't being done, since I'm an entrepreneur more than working
right.
for a company. And I wrote a home study program, which is now world-renowned. So it is really, no one else seems to be able to write a home study program,
right.
or they don't want to. In my case, it's perfect because I can be behind a computer, I can be on the phone, and when I go out, it's for fun. It's not to go to work.
Precisely. Well, Dr. Joyce, how can someone get in touch with you for your services?
Well, I have several websites. The way to get in touch with me is www.imagemaker1.com. That's what, imagemaker1.com. And also, I've compiled a writing journal, if you will. I have everything I've ever written is on www.businesspresentationsplus.com, or you can get to the same site by going to imageconsultingmaterials.com. Everything I've ever written, ebooks, handbooks, guidebooks, programs, PowerPoints, workbooks, they're all there. And the reason why I did it is because I am older, a senior, and I do want my work to live on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I did it. And so the other website I have is www.personalstyleanalysis.com for men and for women. There are lots of downloads, lots of anything you want to know about style and fashion is at yours for a very low price. Very low price.
Fantastic. And what can we expect from you in 2010 and beyond?
I've got lots of plans. I've already started working with Hilton
mm-hmm.
Johnson Productions and had a
mm-hmm.
teleclass last night. It was
mm-hmm.
wonderful. And I have a teleclass scheduled with Peak Performance on Tuesday, May 25th. I plan on being a pageant judge and diamond sponsor for the Washington Metropolitan Miss Chinese American Beauty Pageant, one of the biggest and most exciting events in the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, tri-states area in September, and then going to China with the winners. So immediately
Fantastic.
Following the beauty contest, the three pageant winners will travel to Beijing, Shanghai, and Canton, China, as
mm-hmm.
the promotional ambassadors for the pageant sponsors. So I definitely want to get more into that type of thing, since as a younger image person, I was in commercials
right.
and doing pageants and judging
mm-hmm.
contests. So I love doing that. I love working with the 18 to 25-year-old when they're first starting out on their life. And I'm going to be training consultants to teach my classes in the next 5 years. And I will be I will be there as a bystander, and just to keep improving what I've already improved upon. I change it every year. I don't have a cookie cutter course.
That sounds fantastic. And what I hear also, what's unique about it is that, you are coming in with all your wealth of information and you're leaving a wonderful legacy to the younger generations, and especially even in this case with the beauty pageants, because there is a certain point in time where, they might have, they need the wisdom that you have to offer in terms of, hey, looks is one thing, but it's whole package. that matters. And
yes.
I think you, from that standpoint of view, I think you are bringing a tremendous amount of a wealth of information and maturity and everything else that completes a person.
Yes, definitely. And the most flattering thing of it all is one of my students from 2005
mm-hmm.
is the person who is putting on this
mm-hmm.
and remembered what you learned from me and wants to bring me in. So everything that you do leads to something else if you just are patient and you work hard.
And also, I know that you do recruit people who are interested in being an image consultant. So maybe briefly, 60 seconds or so, you can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I'm doing is you're allowed to have trainers
mm-hmm.
to teach for you, but I'm very picky because I worked very hard to create these courses. So I have some people in mind over the next few years to come in and do some training in front of me with the class, and I'll be there. And eventually I think that I will be giving or delegating the classes to them. I do have someone in India that's teaching already and someone in China. So I'm very excited to, like you said, that legacy part, it isn't so much that I feel I'm so special, I need a legacy. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's really
mm-hmm.
more for me to feel as a writer, which is what I've discovered that I am,
sure.
that my writing will still be out there even after I'm gone.
Right, right. Well, you have a wealth of knowledge to share, and I think a lot of times we don't realize that. You know, my mom have always mentioned to me a long, long time ago, is, and she said, no matter how much wealth you may have accumulated, how much things you have around you and everything else, I would have tasted more salt of life than you have. and that's nothing more than living wisdom. And you've been doing what you're doing all this while, came from a challenging, say, situation, so to speak, overcame all challenges, pioneering spirit, be original, all the things you said about what one has to be, you're the person that, you know, exemplified that. So you're the example, and I think for that it speaks volume. And so I think you have so much to offer from that standpoint of view alone in itself.
That's a very nice compliment, and I truly appreciate it, because when you get feedback like that, you know that you're going in the right direction and that you keep learning more so that you can keep moving up into the right direction. And it doesn't mean because you're a senior you can't continue. There are a lot of, there's actually several 80-year-olds that are still image consultants and doing a fantastic job. So
that's right.
I really appreciate the compliment. It means a lot to get the feedback.
Oh, you're welcome. And we are coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Sure. I came up with a recipe for you, Jenny.
Uh-huh.
Put all of your good qualities into a large pot. Season with your past successes. Stir carefully to ensure you haven't made any mistakes. And when done, strain out all of those negative things that have infiltrated your life and people that have tried to put you down, and mix together with like-minded people to proceed to ingest for a healthier and more prosperous life.
That's fantastic. I love it. Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you. Well, my mentor, my husband, helped me with that.
Fantastic. Dr. Joyce, thank you for the great recipes, for living us, for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me this Tuesday coming up, next Tuesday, that is, Tuesday morning, when we kick off our Mother's Day celebration theme. My guest will be Lana Nguyen, a mother who adopted her daughter from Vietnam during Operation Baby Lift, and Tammy Nguyen Lee, a filmmaker who recently made an award-winning movie about Operation Baby Lift. We will be discussing the 35th anniversary of Operation Baby Lift, the impact it had on the children who were saved, and the joy it brought to the adopted parents in the United States. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. And thank you for listening. Have a great week. Dr. Joyce, thank you again, and have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Johnny. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.